This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
All right, Pete Carroll will be stepping up to the podium any moment. As soon as he does, we will send you out to the VMAC. But one thing to get out there for you, if you want to win two tickets to see the Seahawks 2021 home opener at Lumen Field this Sunday, what you need to do is text the word BLITZ, B-L-I-T-Z. Text that word to 710-710 and then enter the secret code word that you get in the bounce back at the link for your chance to win two tickets to Sunday's game. And here's a little hint for you. It's got something to do with my co-host. You know what this is? That's what I'm being told. Contest ends this
week. Could be anything.
Who knows? It could go a lot of directions.
Does everything to do with an accident?
I don't know. It doesn't tell me what the code word is. So there you go. But that's the hint. Something to do with my co-host here. The contest ends this Wednesday at noon. So text the word BLITZ to 710-710 right now for your chance to enter and win two tickets. The building should be going nuts this weekend, right?
Yeah, I would think so, but I don't know.
You
think it's going to be full capacity? There's restrictions.
So.
Restrictions on getting into the stadium.
I think people are excited, man, especially on the heels of a win like that. I think that just amps up everybody's anticipation level, their excitement level. They want to see them at home for the first time in well over a year. So,
according to the texters, because there's like 65 already. Somebody texted in Wyman.
It's Blitz. I like this code word, caked, like caked pants.
Right.
I'm going to guess that's not it, but I don't really know what the word is. They didn't give it to me, so they may be right. Who knows? Maybe they're going to get silly with it. But yeah, if you text in Wyman, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help you win tickets. No. But if you want to text that in just for fun, help yourself. Help yourself.
Don't tell them that. Don't tell them that.
But
I thought it would be a pooping story reference.
I love that. That's what you're so closely associated with. People think think of that.
I said accident. I was talking about a car accident.
So good. All right. I would think, just to get back to the crowd this weekend, I would think it should be a packed to the rafters building. I think people are fired up. They are excited. You saw what was going on in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I mean, that place was loud. It was loud until roughly mid, late third quarter, and it seemed like it died down in a big way.
Well, and then you could all of a sudden hear the Seahawks fans, man. I couldn't believe it, man. I really couldn't. Those bright green shirts are great because they stand out.
Yeah, you can isolate them. You can pick them out of the crowd everywhere.
And especially seeing, with that sea of blue, and then all of a sudden you see these bright green, what is it, action green. So anyway, that was cool. And, you look around the rest of the country right now. I mean, there's 100,000 at Ohio State.
Yeah,
plus.
Well, how many were at the Michigan game?
Michigan, I think, holds 100. You saw in Colorado, in Denver. I mean, there's lots of crowds. I think people are hungry to get back to work. And, that's what the Seahawks fans do. They go to work.
Well, and if they're going to travel to Indianapolis to see the Seahawks, I'm going to just hazard a guess they'll be out there at Lumen Field to see him, I think. All right, Pete Carroll stepping up to the podium right now.
Afternoon. John Boyle, want to get us going?
I would love to. Now you got home and got to take a chance to take a second look at the game. Just what stood out, maybe that you didn't notice on first viewing.
Yeah, I really liked the overall effort. It was a complete effort in that everybody contributed, and both sides of the ball and special teams played together well, and the complementary football was obvious. And Mike kicking the ball, backing him up all day long, and we were efficient enough to play a good, solid football game. So, and again, like I said before last night, I think because of the respect we have for that club, this was a really good, solid win.
Jackie.
Hey, Coach, after watching Russ's film, what did you think of him in particular with the four touchdowns and zero interceptions?
No, he played terrific. Yeah, he only missed a couple things that he could have done differently and was very efficient. It was an excellent first game.
Michael Sean Dugar.
Hey, Pete, what's the latest on the guys in the concussion protocol?
It's going to take, you know, a couple of days to get it done. They're not the same. They're individual cases, and we'll treat them, of course, individually. But there's a time frame sequence that they have to follow through to make it back. So nothing to make a prediction about right now, other than, you know, we'll see what happens all the way till Wednesday. And that's when it kind of starts the thing back towards their return.
Curtis?
Yeah, I'll kind of jump off what Mike was following up there. What's your kind of outlook on Rashad Penny's status and how he's going to handle the calf situation, and what does that do for you guys here in the short term?
Yeah, he's got a calf strain, and so it'll take us a bit to figure out, you know, what the return would be on that. He ran really well when he ran the other night, so we're gonna miss him. It looks like this week, you know, we won't know. We'll let you know how that goes, but. It would, you know, Alex is ready to go, and both Homer and DJ have done, you know, they're ready to go too. So we're in good shape. We had four running backs up this week, so we're in pretty good shape at the position. Unfortunately, if it takes them a couple weeks, and we'll figure out how to handle that.
Art.
You did.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him.
I'm just testing you. Yeah. First week. The efficiency numbers for Russell speak for themselves, but upon film review, what did you see about the whole pass offense that worked better than last year?
Well, I don't know that's I wouldn't jump to conclusions about what better than last year. I just think we were sharp first time out. A lot of guys contributed, and there's a lot more there, you know. So you know, it was a really efficient, good first ball game. I had a couple protection issues that we just missed out on that we could have easily changed the outcome of. And other than that, it was really almost flawless. So it was a very, you know, very good start. I don't know about comparing it to anything in the past.
Masvita.
Hey, Pete. Trey Flowers and DJ Reed both played all 76 snaps. Defensive snaps. Just what did you see after watching the film from both of those?
The guys played really, really tough and tackled well. We kept the ball underneath us all day, so that they had to make some plays. I think DJ might have had five tackles in the game or something. Trey had a couple really good hits, challenging their coverage. We really minimized our errors. We played very solid. We had one play that got away from us on the big crossing route that we made a mistake on. But other than that, they played really solid football, and they seemed to fit well with how we did things, and I liked how aggressive they were able to be.
Bob Condotta, Seattle Times.
How did you feel, like, especially up front? You guys had 10 quarterback hits and 3 sacks. Did anything really stand out to you up front about what the guys were doing up there?
Yeah, the variety of guys that contributed. You know, it was really spread across the board. Everybody had something to contribute. I think it was interesting when Alton came in late. You know, he had a nice contribution late too, and he just didn't get a chance to play many plays just because of the rotations. But everybody looked good, and Darryl particularly. You know, I think he played 25 plays or somewhere right in there. You know, he was very active and really an exciting addition. As we've been talking about, we were hoping, and it kind of showed up on game day. And again, they have a good offensive line too, you know, and they remember they only allowed 21 sacks all last season. So that's a really good group that they're playing with. And so it was a good effort across the board. And really, the rotation, we're not settled on how to do it yet, because we had everybody contribute some.
Jen?
Warner, what did you learn about mixing and matching Ugo and Marquise? Is that the way that you would like it to look as the season goes on?
We're just going to keep going. We're just going to keep going with you know, with the rotation at this point. I felt, and I think Marquise did too, that it was good to get back out there. You know, it was a little bit new, more new to him than maybe he would have anticipated. Remember, since last second game of the year, he's played 17 snaps going, you know, going into this time. So he's still just getting going. And so he's going to play a lot better and a lot more, I think, comfortable. I think he was a little bit on edge, just trying to do things exactly right, and wasn't quite as cutting loose as he will be. Ugo did a really nice job again, really added to the looks and the disguises and all that kind of stuff. And these guys are playing; they're challenging each other, and it's what competition does, you know. And these guys are going to give us really good play. So we'll see. I can't call it yet.
Nico.
Their coach Nico Tamarine just started over at Como. You're looking ahead a little bit here. I know you had him there in the preseason, but first regular season game coming up with the 12s back. I mean, that's got to be so exciting for you guys. What is that feeling like ahead of this week?
Yeah, no, I don't mind looking forward to that. You know, I'm kind of interested to see, you know, how loose they let it go. You know, are they going to just go crazy, or how are they going to be? I don't know. I would expect it. Everybody's going to be really excited to be part of it. Fortunately, you know, we played pretty good in the opener, and that helps. And last time out, you know, they saw us there and it looked pretty good. You know, we take the responsibility. We've got to play well for the fans to be really crazy and at their best. But we're going to count on them now. You know, we're excited to get in front of them. I think it's great for the whole area that we're back, and hopefully it's a really good event. It's a really good team we're playing again, too. So we're going to need everything we can get, and we're certainly going to need what the 12s bring.
Tim?
Pete, how are you using Rasheem Green differently maybe this year than you had in previous years, and how much of what he showed during preseason you saw show up yesterday?
Yeah, no, he carried over everything he has done in camp in preseason. He played a lot in the preseason. We were introducing him to a new, you know, kind of a new role, and we wanted to see how he took to it. And he was always really excited about it. You know, we played him more on the edge and more outside, and allowed him some more freedom to use his athleticism. And we weren't sure how he would adapt to that. You know, he's been more of a traditional five technique and you know, inside a lot on his pass rushes. But because he does run really well, and he's, you know, big, long kid, and plays with really good juice, we thought maybe it would fit him, and so it has. And so at this point, and so we're really excited. I mean, he was all over the place, and that's just what he did in preseason too. So it's exactly the same guy, and you know, it doesn't always translate like that. And so in this case, to start us off, he got off to a great one, and we're really pumped up about that.
Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune.
Coach, you mentioned yesterday that the cornerbacks in the secondary cut off some of their pass routes down the field. Can you elaborate on what exactly they did, what worked there that was good for that?
Yeah, we did a nice job on intermediate and deep end things, so that the ball had to get dumped off. The backs caught a lot of balls in this game. If you look at those numbers, we kept the stats down. Really, we had one kind of a remarkably bad play, and other than that, you know, we really forced the football to get thrown down underneath us so we could run and break on the ball and do our hitting and all. And I thought you saw some really good plays by Bobby and Jordan, driving back up on stuff underneath. The corners did a nice job too in reaction, and all of that worked out real well.
And how's Alton Robinson health wise
I think he's fine. I don't know anything.
Okay.
No. Hey, Greg, did you know they spelled your name with two G's at the end?
No, my mother did that.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks, Dave. They only had the one explosive run in the fourth quarter. They averaged 3.8 yards a carry. What goes into playing good defense, run defense, particularly when you're a nickel so much?
Well, I'd like to comment on the fact that I thought the running game on both sides of the ball was really good for us. And again, I go back to, you know, they had only allowed 3.7 or something a rush for the whole season last year, and we got off to 140 and over 5 yards a carry. That was a good accomplishment for us. And on the other side of it, they were a really good running team too last year. You know, Jonathan had a big year, tons of yards after contact, and so we had a lot of respect for them, and had to, you know, try to keep them in check, which I felt like we did. You know, they picked up some yards late in the game when they ran the ball, and we were just kind of just running the clock and all that. So I thought all in all,
we did a really nice job of corralling him. We could have tackled a little bit better. We missed some tackles and bounced off some stuff because he's a really good runner. That's why he gets yards after contact. But what it takes, John, it takes discipline. It's discipline. The game is really measured in terms of the run, about how you play in terms of relative spacing, the spacing between the blocks and the defenders. And that's where the discipline needs to take place. You have to play the schemes properly and play in coordination with the guy next to you and behind you. And it just takes the real strict approach. It's not just all blood and guts and hard-nosed stuff. It's really about the technical side of it and playing the scheme well. And we did that pretty well. And last year we were a pretty good run team too. And so it's a good start for us. And whether you're playing base or nickel, you got to use it all. And we still have to fit our guys in. The DB's got to work with the line and the linebackers, and all of that is what it calls for. Probably Adam, way more than you wanted.
Adam?
Dave's talking in his password voice today, and the password is... Oh, sorry.
Adam, you're muted.
No, let's just join in on this. When somebody's not talking because they're muted, that we don't tell them, okay? Just let them just go and go and go.
Around the NFC West yesterday, and obviously Arizona, Tennessee in particular.
The division just came out roaring, and a lot of points scored, a lot of big plays, a lot of exceptional play. I got a chance to catch the highlights from the other teams, flying home last night, and there was just one big play after another, So, what do you expect? It's arguably one of the toughest divisions in the league, and there's no doubt in it, And so from the start, it's just going to make us have to be better. That's what this means. But pretty heralded opening. Heralded
Curtis?
Opening.
Yeah, Pete, is that the best game Brian Rennie has had? You, it seems like he's come a long way too, to where he's able to put together a performance like that and really kind of command the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
like
I think it stood out the most. He had the most special plays for, I think, in one game. The hits on the quarterback in particular. The line of scrimmage is really good. He's always good there. But he had a good day getting in the backfield, on the QB, and remarkably well executed hits on the quarterback where he didn't get penalized, because he had a couple big shots. And he did it really well, and did it exactly the way you need to, and for the opportunity. So that was, it takes a lot away from it when you pound a guy in the dirt and then they throw a flag on you. He did not let that happen. So he played a really good ball game, and he continues to be a big force. We love playing with the big guys, and he's a factor.
Tim?
Pete, a little off topic, but just because of your connection to SC, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or reaction to their decision to part with Clay Helton today.
Yeah, really disappointed for that regime, because that affects a lot of people. It's not just one guy, it's the whole staff gets affected and all of that. And, the following and the fans and the families that were counting on their kids playing for that. Although that's a very difficult decision to make, and they made it, they're making the decision for what they feel is the right reasons. They're trying to keep the program moving forward and all that. I know I got beat by Stanford a couple times too. It's hard, like John McKay always said, by far the toughest matchup we ever had was with Stanford, so it carries a lot of weight. So unfortunately they had to make a change. Clay's a good man, a good ball coach, and he'll bounce right back. But it's a tough decision for the Trojan family on this day.
Bob Condota, Seattle Times.
Any update on Ethan Posick? And then I was wondering how you thought Tyler Mabry played, and just sort of how the tight end group in general kind of went yesterday.
I haven't heard the results of the testing on Ethan yet, but he got a sprained knee, and we'll have to wait and see how serious it is.
tight ends did really well yesterday. Tyler got a chance to get in there and do some stuff. Had a couple spot plays in there and back us up and came through just fine. It's a good position group for us, you know. And with Colby Parkinson on the mend and coming back here before too long, it's really a good spot. Gerald made his plays. He'll make more. I thought Will Disley had a really good game at the line of scrimmage, as well as a couple big plays and did some big thumping with running with the football, which was fun to see. And so it's a nice position group for us.
Last question, Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune.
Uh-oh. Number two.
So you don't want the SC job, right, Pete? Is that your sense?
No, they haven't called, Greg, and so I don't want that. I'm very happy.
I've noticed that all the players are standing during the national anthem. Now, do you know, is that a collection of individual decisions, or did the team talk about that? And then what do you think about the league-wide simultaneous anthem yesterday?
Yeah, we allow our guys the freedom to make the choice as they want to in this case, and so that's what you're seeing. I thought that it was well done. The collective anthem. I thought that was a nice touch, and it connected us all. And when at a time it's an important statement to make, and everybody to the person would, I'm sure, back up the thought that we all wanted to stand for. For all the great loss and all of that took place there. So I thought it was particularly good. I'm glad they did it the way they did it.
Okay, thank you.
See ya.
There you go, Pete Carroll addressing the media. They need to work on they're still, everybody's doing this through Zoom and everything, and everybody's microphone's over-modulated.
Hey, Pete, I was wondering if what happened in the third quarter was
I like the one where Art Teal, who's always has his muted and doesn't realize it. And so Pete's going, don't tell him.
Don't tell, just let him talk.
Just let him go.
He gets done and everybody just stares at him.
The other thing I love about Pete, I guess maybe because I do the same thing, but like he'll say something and then like 5 seconds later I'll go, heralded opening?
Yeah, he'll make fun of what he just said.
Yeah. Remember when we were talking to him and he said stubbed a nub, and then later on he's like, stubbed a nub? Like what?
Yeah,
what does that even
say?
Mean?
Yeah. Well, yesterday he caught himself saying, well, here's the cut. This is him catching himself saying something he didn't want to say.
The day to me really goes to Shane. I think his first time out and a chance to show it. And I'm really, really proud of what he was able to do, because he went for it the whole time. And we did exactly how we've been practicing and how we've been preparing. And he handled it with such a cool overall mentality and all. And he and Russ were just cooking. And so, I'm sorry I said that. Just, can you scratch that? Doggone it. They did really well together.
Doggone it. I said Russ cooking. Ugh.
I thought, maybe he threw that in there on purpose. And then, no, it was a natural reaction, I think.
It's funny to see his face. If you're watching the video, he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Did you scratch that? I can't believe I said that. It was so good. That's good. So good. All right. Coming up. As far as that Tyler Lockett catch, we talked about it—the basket catch, the bucket catch, whatever you want to call it—we're going to talk about
a bucket catch.
We're going to talk about how tough it was with our resident NFL receivers expert Michael Bumpus. He will join us next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle, and we are going to do this every single week. Bring in the voice of the Seahawks pregame, halftime, and postgame show. You know him, you love him. He's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is Michael Bumpus. Bump, how are you, man?
What's up, fellas? I'm doing well. Week one is in the books. The Hawks look good. The NFC West looks good. I'm just glad we're talking some football.
I know, and it's, a win is awesome. There's so many aspects of this game I want to get to, but I've got to ask you, as a former wide receiver, level of difficulty on that first Tyler Lockett catch for a touchdown, 1 to 10. Is that a 12? Is it an 8? What is it?
Man, it's probably a 10.511. That's the toughest catch in football to me, over your shoulder, because there's a blind spot in there. Like you lose the football for a second. Typically when you're running back towards the football or you're going across the middle, you keep your eyes on the rock. But over the shoulder like that, that's tough. But Tyler Lockett just makes it look so easy. I mean, the way he bends his body and puts that football in position. Great throw by Russell Wilson as well. But 16 had to catch it, 10 and a half, 11.
Well, and he was looking over his left shoulder and then kind of spun around and caught it over his right shoulder. So I'm imagining that blind spot you're talking about was even more prevalent in that situation.
Yeah, and who knows what side is the strong side, right? We're left-handed, right-handed. We all have our strong sides. Wow. So it might even be more difficult if he doesn't really like that shoulder. And it just reminded me of Willie Mays. That's the first thing I said when I saw that play. I'm like, man, that's Willie Mays' play right there.
What did you think about the offense and some of the plays? I mean, was that kind of what you expected, Michael? I mean, we saw a couple fly sweeps, you know, and I saw that they tried to use Darius Leonard to tackle him, who's a really good player, and he just couldn't get there. But, you know, it looked like there was a good amount of that kind of stuff that we kind of expected to see. But I feel like there's a lot more to come, you know, later on in the season, depending on the defense they face.
Yeah, Dave, I was expecting to see creativity, right? And I think that's what we saw. We saw the fly sweep. We saw the tight end screens. I think Will Disley had two receptions. Everett had two receptions. And we saw the deep ball. They didn't get rid of that. We saw the quick game. And the great thing about this offense is they put so much on film for defenses to prepare for. And you always have a play to run off a play, right? We saw the fly sweep. They're going to have something off the fly sweep. I guarantee you they're going to fake a tight end screen and go the other way. I guarantee you they're going to put Tyler Lockett on a corner post like he ran and bring something underneath. So I was looking for variety, and I was looking for Russell Wilson to get the ball out of his hands quickly and for them not to ignore the run game. Chris Carson at 16 carries for 91 yards. They did everything, man.
Well, and you brought up the one aspect that really got me excited, and I think Dave probably liked it as well, because we talked all last year about the tight ends and where are they? You know, they were on the field. They just didn't seem to be part of the offense, and this one they got them involved early. I mean, not that they were the primary targets, but five combined targets, five combined catches, 57 yards and a touchdown. And it just seemed like, you know, just putting that into the mind of defenders that, man, I've got two guys here in Disley and Everett who can catch the ball. And Everett's just like a big wide receiver almost out there. Just it seems like an aspect of the offense we didn't get a chance to see last year. And it was good to see it very early this year.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's nice to see Uncle Will get a ball in the flat and stiff arm a DB and get up the field and see Everett on screens and then just run a slant from the outside and score a touchdown. And the great thing about getting the tight ends involved is that when you come out in a double tight formation, Dave, you can probably attest to this, you're thinking run first, right? This is a running formation. They're probably going to run the rock. But now you really don't know. And I think in the past, that's where the Hawks have been predictable, is that they get in these formations and you can kind of guess what's going to happen. To whereas, you know, film's going to be out there. Defenses are going to be right sometimes, but you can't just hone in on one thing. So when you get tight ends involved early like that, that's the type of pressure you put on defenses.
What do you think for as far as going forward at running back? Because Rashad Penny, it's just very disappointing that he's going to be on IR for 3 weeks at least. So, you know, as far as what we saw, DJ Dallas out there a little bit. Alex Collins, that was kind of surprising that he was down yesterday. You know, maybe they activate him. Who do you think, based on what we saw in the preseason and in past years, is going to be that number two running back bump?
It has to be Alex Collins, but because he wasn't activated, it makes you think that it's not going to be him, right? If off of the preseason he had, in my mind, there was no doubt that we're going to see him dressed up on the 53 on the field this week, but that just didn't happen. So there's something there that maybe they don't like. I'm not sure what it is. So I'm going to lean towards DJ right now. But I think that if Alex Collins can have a solid week of practice and just be the guy that we saw in the preseason, it's his job to lose. And unfortunately, man, I think the Rashad Penny experiment is over. I mean, some point, you kind of got to move on. And I feel bad for the kid because things have happened that are out of his control. Like he can't not get hurt. He can't, you know, just go out there and ask defenders not to hit him and not run hard and do all these things that a running back has to do. So I think you have to start preparing for the future. And right now, the quick fix to me is Alex Collins.
Well, and then the other thing is DJ Dallas plays lots of special teams too. Yeah. So if you're thinking about bringing a guy up, you bring up Alex Collins, he's not really running down on kickoffs or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think DJ will eventually get his chance if he keeps running down and making plays and on special teams and doing all that good stuff. But you got to go with the guy who's had 1,000-yard rushing in the season before. You know, you got to give Alex Collins a look.
Hey, defensively, there were a lot of guys that really stuck out. I mean, Rasheem Green looked great out there. I thought Diggs was really physical. But what excited me is seeing Darrell Taylor, because he was the unknown last year. We didn't even know what he looked like. We hadn't seen him on the field. We didn't see him in practice. And they moved up to take him. And we're looking at it and going, man, what kind of – is this going to be a bust? We never saw him step on the field. And to see that energy and his explosiveness in, you know, game one, this is really his rookie year. That for me was really exciting to see. Just your tip of the iceberg, I would think, with a guy like that, right?
Yeah, that was exciting to see a player walk down on the line of scrimmage in a 2-point stance and just fire off the football. I mean, his sack was beautiful. I told Big Ray, I'm like, man, he hit that offensive tackle with a receiver release. He had a little 1-2 step, got him off balance, pushed him, set him down, went after the quarterback. I mean, those are the things that those guys dream about, making those plays. And to see Darrell Taylor have an impact on the game, not even just that. I mean, he was always around the quarterback, always around the football, and he seemed comfortable.
Russ with a couple of scrambles. You know, I'm trying to figure out, like, do we just say this because it's his 10th year that, oh, he's not as fast as he was? You look pretty quick there, you know, and a couple of those runs. I mean, I feel like that's something falls into the category of things that just get said, you know, just because he's, you know, older, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's losing a step. I mean, it's natural, that does happen, but he looked pretty quick to me.
Yeah, he looked quick. I mean, he's not going to break off those 45-yard runs like he used to consistently. I think he still has those capabilities. I think he's more mobile than the average quarterback. And that's what this time does. It slows you down a little bit. But, I mean, he still has some juice in those legs, but I think he's smarter now. I think that – I mean, when's the last time we've seen the pirouette? I mean, that used to be his go-to, right? Go one way, spin. Go the other way, spin. You know, as you get older, man, you've been around the block a while. You're long in the tooth. You start to figure out, all right, maybe I don't need that. Maybe I just keep my eyes downfield, or I give the illusion that I'm running and I'm really just waiting for my guys to get open. So, yeah, he's slowed down a bit, but it's nothing drastic. I don't look at him and like wince when he's running the football. I think that he's just evolved as a quarterback, and we're seeing that.
Yeah, the other thing too, I thought that in years past, I feel like there's been almost like a desperation to make plays, make something happen if a play breaks down. He seemed yesterday to me like he was okay just, you know, throwing it in the ground, or, you know, kind of surrendering, you know, and maybe not surrendering is the word, but I mean, you know, just, you know, live to fight another day. And whereas in years past, I felt like there was some more desperation from his kind of play. And I feel like this offense and the way he feels comfortable, kind of showed up to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that comes with lots of reps and then having a coordinator and a coach that have done a great job of getting a message to him and making him realize, look, take the check down. You know, I looked at this offense yesterday and I saw a lot of bailout plays. I saw a lot of guys in the flats just in case you need them. You know, everything's not downfield. So, yeah, he's maturing. You know, it reminds me, back in his early career, he was like Kobe, man. Kobe would not pass the ball to anybody. I'm going to live and die by me. I'm going to make the incredible play. And then as you get older, you're like, okay, I'm going to work the system now. You know, maybe I don't need to be the hero every single play. Man, I'm playing for the fourth quarter. I'm not trying to win it all right now. And I think we're seeing that in Russell Wilson. And what it's going to do is it's going to make his players play for him a bit more and understand that, you know, he's going to take check downs and longevity. I mean, he's never missed a start. And if he can limit those wild plays, I'm just trying to do it on my own, we can keep that streak alive.
Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pregame, halftime, and postgame show right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We appreciate it, Bump. We'll talk again next week.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There you go. There's Michael Bumpus. He'll be with us every Monday throughout the season, so make sure you tune in for that. Coming up, could too much power be a bad thing for the Mariners? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the show, so make sure you stay tuned for that conversation. Right now, it's time for the Mariners' breakthrough moment of the game, powered by Fox Plumbing and Heating, and it comes courtesy of Tom Murphy.
The 1-0 swung on, lifted left field. This is hit well. Ramos back at the track, looking up, and it is gone!
Number two of the night, Tom Murphy. He rides it out into the Mariners' bullpen. The lead extended. It is 5-3 as Tom Murphy has struck again.
There you go. That's the Mariners' breakthrough moment of the game, powered by Fox Plumbing and Heating. Two home runs in that game. That series did not go the way anybody wanted or anticipated, Dave. I was at the game yesterday. Nice day out. Good company. Bad result.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were tens of people there that were disappointed like I was.
I know. I was looking across the way when I left the stadium. So I had a 35-minute journey home instead of a 4.5-5-hour journey home. But I was looking over there. It didn't seem like there were a lot of people.
No. I think
short lines at the
not really many lines.
Like
it was, listen, it's tough the opening weekend of the NFL. It's the Diamondbacks, the second-worst team in all of baseball record-wise. I guess I get it. I mean, it's a nice day outside. Team's still in it. I mean, they're three games out now, but you can't kick these games. You can't do that. You can't say, well, you got Boston, they can make up ground. They can. You're right. But that puts more pressure on this series with the Red Sox. You got a three-game series with the Red Sox, who are ahead of you in the wild card standings, along with the Yankees, who won today in extra innings. Thanks for nothing, Twins. And the Blue Jays, and you've got seven more games with the Oakland A's. So, yes, you can get things done against those teams that you're competing with, but you could do yourself a really big favor by beating the really, really bad teams that are playing for nothing other than being a spoiler. Yeah. And that would include the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were coming into this series, I think, 51 games under 500, I believe. They're terrible, Dave.
So I'm guessing that you got rip-roaring drunk and ate three or four hot dogs?
No, that didn't happen.
Oh, wait, that would be me.
That would be you.
I would have done. So do you think, nobody showed up Sunday. It was like 13,000. I guess over the weekend, that's what I'm looking on ESPN as far as their attendance goes. But
I'll take the under.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I'm looking at like Kansas City. It was like 20, 24, 22. And then the series before that was more like the 26, 28. I'm not sure if that's people, maybe it's the weather isn't the greatest or whatever, but, you got a retractable roof and everything. I was disappointed to see that when I looked over there. I was like, oh, there's not that many. But then, then they go and lose the game. So that's too bad. I mean, yeah, it was a chance for them. What if they sweep Boston, though?
That would be massive.
Because, does that make up for it? And then all of a sudden, you got to go to Kansas City and Oakland and the Angels, kind of a long road stretch there. But they come back home for the last six. I would love it if they were, close to being in some kind of position. That'd be really fun for those series to end that way.
Yeah, it's just are they going to sweep Boston? I wouldn't bet on it. Can they win two of three? Absolutely. Boston has not been playing well. So you're getting them at the right time. You are more than capable of taking two of three. And that's what you need to expect. A sweep would be awesome. I don't expect that. I didn't expect them to sweep Arizona, but I did expect a series win. You lost the series at home to Arizona.
Yeah.
You couldn't hit. Couldn't hit. Pitching was weird. It was a weird day. I mean.
And their bullpen's terrible.
Yeah. But you had Kikuchi start the game. He goes five innings through 76 pitches, and they pulled him. And not saying he was sharp. He was if you didn't watch the game, you'd think he was sharp. I think he had 8 strikeouts, 1 walk. And you're going, oh, looks good. 1 run? Why would you pull him? Well, there was a lot of traffic. There was a lot of traffic on the base paths. He was working his way out of jams, and then they brought in Masevich, who immediately just caked his pants, as you like to say, Dave. It was immediate. I think it was like 3 in a row. 3 hits in a row, just boom, boom, boom. It was like, oh, my goodness, this is brutal. So, the bullpen let him down. It didn't work out well for him in that case, the way they have throughout the season. The bullpen is maybe the biggest reason they're even in this position right now. So I can't get too mad at that. But it was just an interesting moment that, Kikuchi, again, had given up 1 run, struck out 8, threw 76 pitches, and he was done. If you needed any further evidence in his future here in terms of that extension being picked up, I think that's it. There was something you weren't seeing, or the velocity was down, or whatever you saw, but you didn't trust him to go back out there in the sixth. He's not going to get picked up for 4 years, $66 million. That's done. There's no way that's happening.
Yeah.
If it does happen, I'm going to have a lot of questions. A lot of questions with it. Yeah, if he wants to come back on the one-year, $13 million player option, awesome. Love to have him back on that. But 4 years, 66, nope. Sorry.
Yeah. How about Kelnick hitting a home run in that situation? I mean, just needed one more guy on base to tie it up.
Yep.
And Gary Hill was talking about the Marte homer and how that loomed large. And, you know, I was just listening to it on the way in. But, yeah, in that situation, listening to the at-bat with Kelnick, it's a nice good sign that he can hit a home run in that situation. He blasted it, too.
He squared it up. It was good to see. And you know, I'm curious what this season will do for him and Cal Raleigh moving forward, because you're still looking at two guys batting under 200.
Yeah.
That if we're just going to talk about their seasons in totality, not good. Not good at all. If we're going to be honest. And the other part of it is, and I know we'll get going here, there was so much hand-wringing and so much angst over, you brought up Zunino too soon, you broke him. You brought up Ackley too soon, you broke him. You brought up Smoke too soon, you broke him. You don't hear any of that about these guys. I haven't heard anybody say anything about that with two guys. Is that not a thing anymore?
Well, I mean, was it that after that short of a period of time that they were saying that about Zunino and... You know,
I just haven't seen anybody really express exactly that level of concern, and maybe it won't be. Maybe these guys are different, but right now, Kelnick seems to be getting better. Cal Raleigh looks completely overmatched at the plate. He did have a couple hits in one of the games, but for the most part, when he comes up to the plate, if you're being honest, I expect an out. It's just not happening.
Well, you had four hitters yesterday that are well under 200, you know, and then, you know, you go up to Tom Murphy, who's 207. So, you know, really, I mean, there's three guys that are batting 250 or above.
Yeah. You don't have a 300 hitter on the team. I mean, it's amazing they're here. They've found ways to get it done, and hopefully they can keep this thing going through the final, 19 games, I think they've got left, something like that. So down to a precious few. All right, we're going to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.